You're listening to the Leaping Cholla podcast, recorded in the Wrong Mountain Yurt in the Sonoran Desert.
I am falling away from this world. I am falling away from this world. You are calling me back.
All right, we're going. We're on section 117 of Contributions to Philosophy of the Event. It's called The Leap, and I'm ready when you are.
117, The Leap. The meditation of fundamental ontology, laying of the foundation of ontology as its overcoming, constitutes the transition from the end of the first beginning to the other beginning. This transition, however, is at the same time the run-up to the leap, which alone can initiate a beginning, and especially the other beginning as constantly surpassed by the first. Do you want to, or should I keep going?
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting, the meditation of fundamental laying of the foundation of ontology as it's overcoming. So we want to overcome ontology by laying out its foundations. So, and I mean, essentially ontology, we want to study being in order to lay the foundations of that study. So give it some, its fundamental principles and basic irrefutable ideas, and so that we can overcome it, so we can, I guess, kind of move beyond it. And this is the nature, this is the constitution of the transition from the first beginning to the other beginning. So we have a nice definition of this transition that we've been studying. This transition is at the same time the run up to the leap. So we're kind of stepping back and running up so we could take a nice big leap, which alone can initiate a beginning. So we, in order for there to be another beginning, we have to take a leap first. Especially the other beginning as constantly surpassed by the first. The other beginning is constantly surpassed by the first, because the first is so fast and so big and so everywhere. It is the liberal order the other beginning that we are attempting to initiate is always constantly being surpassed by it. So we must continue leaping incessantly in order to escape the ubiquity of liberal energy. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well done. Prepared here in the transition is the most originary and thus the most historical decision, that either or which allows no hiding places and no regions for evasion, either to remain trammeled to the end and to its running out, i.e. to ever new variants of metaphysics, which become even cruder, more groundless and more aimless, the new biologism and the like, or to initiate the other beginning, i.e. to be resolved toward its long preparation. Since the beginning occurs only in the leap, even this preparation must already be a leaping, and as preparatory, must originate in and spring from the confrontation, interplay, with the first beginning and with its history. What is wholly other of the other beginning versus the first can be made clear through a saying that seems merely to play with an inversion, but in truth everything is transformed.
Should I chat about that?
Yeah.
So we're trying to create an originary, most historical decision through this transition. We're trying to find an either or, a decisive, bidirectional turning or manifestation of the mind, which allows no hiding places and no regions for evasion. So we're not allowed to tuck ourselves away into delusions and faiths and metaphysics. And we can either remain beaten down to the end and to the end of all things. We can continue to subject others to metaphysics, which are crude, increasingly crude and groundless and aimless. Nice description of liberalism and its ad nauseum perpetuation of ideologies and hiding places and regions for evasion to avoid the facts of the world. Or we can initiate the other beginning. The beginning only occurs in the leap. So we must make this leap. We must leap out of liberalism and begin looking for a world beyond it. And it must originate in and spring from the confrontation with the first beginning and with its history. Mm-hmm. So we must confront liberalism, move beyond it, experience the interplay with it. It's not just about walking away, because of course we carry it with us. It is inside us. It's on our backs. It's been infused into us. So we need to continually attempt to confront it and experience the interplay with it as we seek another beginning. It says here, so what is wholly other of the other beginning? So what is actually different about the other beginning, vis-a-vis the first beginning, can be made clear through a saying that seems merely to play with an inversion, but in truth, everything is transformed. I have a feeling that I think what he's basically saying is we're not looking to just do the opposite of the first beginning and kind of invert it and just kind of make a negative image of it and then live with that as if it's somehow something new. But we're trying to transform everything out and away from the liberal order and manifest a new beginning, an other beginning that can leave it behind. But this through a saying that seems merely to play with an inversion, I have a feeling that might refer to what's about to come in the next paragraph. Mm-hmm. So why don't we just roll into that?
Yeah, I'm just getting what those words are.
There's a little bit of Greek in there, huh?
Yeah, right. I was actually curious to talk just a little more about this other paragraph first. I found this confrontation word powerful. Like I was just thinking about something similar today, like turning to face something as opposed to trying for it not to be there or hiding or I don't know, different variations.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but then I always thought of interplay more as like a passing off. So sort of the first beginning passing off to the second, like kicking a soccer ball, which feels a little different than confrontation to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also like this idea of like, you have to be in the leap. You have to already be leaping. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I've been thinking of it a little more as like a passing as opposed to like, actually you have to be leaping to even start seeing the other beginning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool.
So the interplay is a confrontation?
Seems to be.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it seems to me that, I guess to be ever cruder, Anytime you're trying to interplay with liberalism, you're confronting it, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no interplay with liberalism. There's only interplay. Mm-hmm. You're only allowed to play inside it, with it, on the team, as it were.
Mm.
Once you start trying to work outside the team, work around the edges, get out of the fray, get out of the norm, then I think you're necessarily confronting it, right? Just mm-hmm. because it is such a self-contained and self-defensive and a proprietary ideology, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it almost seems by the nature of what you're interplaying with, you're kind of forced to be in a confrontational spot.
Right.
Because liberalism makes enemies of everything that is not itself.
Yeah.
Liberalism is the king of the friend-enemy distinction, or whatever that is, of Carl Schmitt, right?
What is that?
We were talking about that. The political theorist Carl Schmitt, I can't remember the name of his book. It's all the rage in the alt-right, you know. It's like, you know, that politics is about the friend-enemy distinction. And it's like, you need to know who your friends are, you need to know who your enemies are, and mm-hmm. you need to treat them accordingly, and you need to stop thinking that your enemies can become your friends.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's, in the first beginning, there's just so many, obviously, assumptions, givens, like, just thing, like, patterns that happen that have been ingrained, so it feels like it's just a constant confronting, a constant saying,
I mean, if you
stop and what is that,
yeah, if you step out of a pattern and start to try to interact with it, then you're not in the pattern, so you're being very confrontational.
Yeah,
I mean, that's like the classic contemporary liberalism, right? Like if you try to talk to liberals about anything other than using scriptural dogma, you're being confrontational, and you need to leave.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
They use that word.
Of course. Yeah. Why are you being confrontational? Well, you're really just trying to generate some interplay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really like the main problem I have with my daughters. You know, I try to talk to them very calmly and curiously and encouragingly. Like, mm-hmm. let's talk over our views on this particular issue and just really listen to it. You know, not even listen to each other. Like, you speak and I speak, and we both sort of say what we think, and it's mm-hmm. done in the spirit of kind of like, you know, just mutual deliberation, right?
Mm-hmm.
I am being confrontational.
Yeah, right.
And I need to shut up and I need to go away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really stark, because it's like I'm actually encouraging them to voice their views. That's mm-hmm. really what I want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
They want me to shut the hell up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm being confrontational,
mm-hmm.
because I'm not fitting the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I like the not fitting the pattern. I like them as they are. I want them to be themselves and manifest their pattern. My pattern is not their pattern, but I don't think they're being confrontational with me by not having my pattern. I think they're just being their pattern. So between two patterns, there can be being or there can be confrontation,
mm-hmm.
depending on whether you're a liberal or a sane person.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, in a way, they call it confrontational when you're trying to have a conversation, but in a way also it is confrontational, because it's not
the difference between conversational and confrontational. Like, there it is. So, sorry, what are you saying?
But also in a way it is confrontational, because you're asking just saying a different perspective, you're asking them to confront. I mean, which shouldn't be the case. One should be able to say different perspectives, but within the liberal context, it is confrontational.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's interesting because I think my history of talking to liberals is that really it comes down in a very simple way to like we don't agree on certain perspectives on a certain issue. Mm-hmm. I find that disagreement an opportunity to explore who has what facts, where they got those facts, which are actually facts, mm-hmm. which perspective has any kind of what its histories are, what its implications are, and most importantly, what are the likely outcomes if we go, various degrees of manifestation outward of each of our views, mm-hmm. and that's working through disagreements. So that to me is a conversation, I'm not going to play a semantic game of whether that's also confrontation. I mean, I suppose it is, but. I suppose it's a question of whether you find confrontation offensive and worthy of censorship, or whether you find confrontation a chance to actually have a valuable conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which would be my main complaint with liberals is they're boring.
Yeah.
Because
it's just one thing that's being said over and over again.
Yeah, and it's like they just need you to I think liberalism perpetuates a relationship that's shallow mm-hmm. with non-liberals. Mm-hmm. The relationship becomes shallow because the conversation about the issues is just so deeply offensive mm-hmm. and unacceptable to liberalism that slowly over time everything becomes verboten. Mm-hmm. And so the conversation is over. I mean, I've had this evolution of a relationship with multiple liberals now. Yeah. I mean, who just I go to it really excited to talk through the ontology of our perspectives, but it is not cool. It's not welcome.
Yeah.
It's confrontational.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's keep going.
Yeah, yeah. In the beginning, being
in the first beginning.
Oh gosh, sorry.
That's okay.
Oh my God, embarrassing.
Okay. Oh jeez.
Okay. In the first beginning.
Sorry, was I being confrontational?
Always.
Yeah.
In the first beginning, beingness is inventively thought through Greek for think, apprehend, and Greek for gathering, representation, envisioned and posited in the open realm of its essential occurrence, so that beings might show themselves. In the wake of this beginning, beingness then becomes a Greek for what is laid down underneath. Or more precisely, the Greek for what is not hypothetical, in whose light all beings and non-beings come to presence. In this way, being reigns for the sake of beings. But this basic relation now undergoes two interpretations, which then join together and intermix. Being as summon ends becomes the causa prima of beings, each of which is understood as ens creatum, and being as essentia or idea becomes the a priori of the objectivity of objects.
Yeah, I don't think that paragraph needs... we can move on. Okay. Well, there's the episode. Let's
wrap
let's
up.
Just talk about this paragraph for a while. All right, so let's start by telling me what those Greek words are again, through blank and blank, the very top.
Think, apprehend.
Through thinking and apprehending, right?
Okay. Well, sorry, no. The first word is think, apprehend, okay. So both, and then and, gathering, representation.
Gathering slash representing?
No,
or gathering. Just gathering representation as one phrase.
Is the phrase.
That's what that word means? Gathering representation?
Correct.
Okay. I'm glad they have a word for that.
Right?
Yeah. Gigiev or whatever it is. I can't even.
I know. I kind of want to learn how to pronounce these words. Yeah. I don't know.
I've literally started trying to learn Greek like 7 times. I mean,
really?
Not trying. All my life I've thought, oh, I should have taken Greek instead of Latin. I took a lot of Latin, but I should have taken Greek. It's my great regret. in a way, because I took Latin to learn etymology of English, and I think there is actually more etymology, Latin etymology in English than there is Greek. So anyhow, in the first beginning, being or beingness is inventively thought, envisioned and posited in the open realm of its essential occurrence so that beings might show themselves. So when he says thought, it's thought through apprehending and gathering representations. So that's what thought is here. So beingness, and I think again this is probably synonymous with Platonic form or essence. Perhaps it's just the prototypical substance or the stuff that the world contains, the being that there is, the beingness that there is. It's thought, envisioned, and posited in the open realm of its essential occurrence so that beings might show themselves. So being is thought, envisioned, and posited in order that beings might appear. Mm-hmm. Right? So for there to be beings, says the first beginning, we must first envision being as an idea, as an experience, as a reality, and then beings can occur. Mm-hmm. In the wake of this beginning, and as we've grown out of this first beginning, being and beingness then becomes a fundament, a basic reality, an incontrovertible truth, right? What's that first Greek word?
What is laid down underneath.
Yeah, so it becomes the ground, the undeniable, what is given, what is not hypothetical, right? What is what is absolutely understood to be. So in the wake of this beginning, as 2,500 years, being becomes a fundament in whose light all beings and non-beings come to presence. That makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. Being and non-being only come to be apprehended or come to be present to us inside this basic substance or basic idea. In this way, bang reigns for the sake of beings. Now that's a little odd. I mean, other than that, I think that how bang reigns, I mean, obviously this flows logically out of this creating the fundament of being. And bang operates in that being or in that beingness or as an eventual spatial temporal playing field event thing within the substantial being realm. Bang is an intermediary or a facilitator of beings emerging out of beingness. Because how do you get beings out of beingness, right? One is a, how should we say, almost like a ubiquitous, generic presence, beingness. But then beings are distinct, unique, time-specific, event-specific, space-specific, recognizable, representational, distinguishable entities, right? Mm-hmm. But how does that, and it's a classic conundrum in sort of in the wake of Greek thought, is like, how does the world of essences and forms, or put another way, how does the world of universals and particulars, how do these two worlds interact? Mm-hmm. How do particulars emerge out of universals? How do universals exist when there are particulars? How do particulars exist when there are universals? What's the relationship there? Bang is, in a way, the relationship. Bang reigns in this realm, this open realm, that there might be beings. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm glad. But this basic relation now undergoes, so this basic relation, I guess this basic relation between beingness, bang, and beings, this basic relation now undergoes two interpretations which then join together and intermix. Being as summum ends, as the ultimate end, becomes the primary cause of beings. So, again, being as a kind of overarching metaphysical essence, or in a sense, the ultimate end of things, where things are going, right? The future assumed fundament of existence that allows us to conceive of beings moving forward in time, because they're always heading into a place where being is, beingness is, and beings can be, right? Yet it's also seen as the original cause of beings. So it's in the future, it's in the past, which is it? Each of which is understood as ens creatum, a created end, and being becomes a being as essentia or idea becomes the a priori of the objectivity of objects. I almost think we need to head into the next paragraph get that. But essentially, I think what he's saying is that being or beingness comes to take on a variety of roles in this relationship between beingness, bang, and beings, and that these roles are, in a sense, unthought through differentiations of one idea that perhaps requires some deeper and more intricate analyses to particularize its manifestational presences.
Right? Yeah, well said.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah. Being becomes the most common, the emptiest, the best known, and at the same time what is most eminently as that cause, the absolute.
Yeah, he's really saying here, so being in our current first beginning conceptual apparatus and conceptual worldview, being is just kind of everything. It's the most common, it's the emptiest, it's the best known, it's the cause, it's the absolute, it's what is most eminently. It's just kind of everywhere. We're like smothered in by being, drowning in being.
Yeah.
Being is the original smother mother, you know.
Yeah. That's true. In all the variations and secularizations of Western metaphysics, this can be recognized again. Being in service to beings, even if, as cause, being would seem to be the master. In the other beginning, however, beings are such as to bear the clearing into which they themselves come to stand. And this clearing essentially occurs as the clearing for the self-concealing, i.e. for bang as event. In the other beginning, all beings are sacrificed up to bang, and only from there do beings as such receive their truth. But bang essentially occurs as event, the site of the moment of decision regarding the nearness and remoteness of the last God. Here, in the ineluctable usualness of beings, bang is the most unusual, and this strangeness of bang is not a mode of its appearance, but is bang itself.
Okay, yeah. This is good stuff. In all the variations and secularizations of Western metaphysics, a.k.a. in the liberal order, this can be recognized again. We can see again that being in service to beings, even if as cause, being would seem to be the master. So the positing of a universal substance, a universal fundament, what is beyond the hypothetical, the positing of a given, of a foundation, of an undeniable reality, is in order to is done in order for there to be beings, so that we can have beings, so we can know what beings are. Being is put in service of beings. Yet as cause, being would seem to be the master. Yes, indeed. I mean, being makes beings possible. It's before them. It has status in time and in space and in conceptual validity and in a sense in just in importance. That is the liberal way. And I'll explain a little more why as we go. In the other beginning, however, beings are such as to bear the clearing into which they themselves come to stand. And this clearing essentially occurs as the clearing for the self-concealing, for bang as events. So juxtaposed to this kind of world in which we know there is a being, so that we can have beings, but that being is first and foremost, I would almost call that liberal self-faith, liberal self-assertion, liberal self-presence, the liberal demand for a world, because progressivism requires a world for progress to always be occurring in. So liberalism demands that there be a thing there that it can own and use according to its ends. Mm-hmm. In the other beginning, and so beings become slaves. I mean, if being is the master, if that fundament is the master, then beings just live thanks to that benevolent being, which is why, you know, you have this doctrine or this sort of sacred order inside liberalism that beings, individual liberals, only owe their existence, their loyalty, their individuality, their conscience, their consciousness to the liberal foundation. Mm-hmm. Right? They are avatars of it. Right? Yeah. In the other beginning, in the post-liberal domain that we are seeking, beings bear the clearing into which they themselves come to stand. So beings bring forth a clearing. Now that means they step out of the masterful being, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They clear it, like you clear a canyon, right? As you jump mm-hmm. over it. Mm.
I was imagining like clearing a field for yep. some reason. Like
they clear it away. That's right.
And you like make a space for.
That's right. And then they come
like
to stand in it.
Clearing a like tent spot or something.
Exactly. And they come to stand in it. And this clearing essentially occurs as the clearing for the self-concealing, for bang as event. Now, so this clearing occurs as a clearing that occurs in order for the self-concealing to occur, for bang as event. Now, what is this self-concealing yeah. thing? Well, if the self conceals, the self becomes confrontational. The self steps out of liberalism. Liberalism mm-hmm. requires infinite transparency. The self is not allowed to conceal itself. The liberal self may not conceal itself from liberalism, mm-hmm. because then it is in travesty. Then it is in heresy. Mm-hmm. Then it is in confrontation. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's not allowed to create clearings in which to stand. It must stand in the fundament, in the beingness that liberalism has put forth. That's the only thing that gives it any standing. Mm-hmm. Right? It must recognize the master. It must serve the master. And it's not allowed to clear out stuff. Mm-hmm. It's only allowed to be in that stuff. It's only allowed to be that stuff. And this bang thing that allows self-concealing, that allows individual occurrences, this is not liberal. Mm-hmm. In the other beginning, all beings are sacrificed up to bang. And only from there do beings as such receive their truth. So that's heresy to a liberal, because bang is the event, and the event comes and goes. Mm-hmm. It starts and stops. Mm-hmm. It occurs and it goes away. Mm-hmm. It is the self-concealing. And that's what he means by self-concealing. It happens and then it conceals itself, right? Mm-hmm. And that is anathema to liberalism, because everything has to be transparent and present in liberalism as a liberal. So beings are sacrificed up to bang. Beings are no longer just slaves to being. Beings are no longer just avatars of the liberal order. Bang takes them over and makes everything an event, mm-hmm. a coming and going, a self-concealing. Bang essentially occurs as event, the site of the moment of decision, right? Again, which mm-hmm. liberals do not like, regarding the nearness and remoteness of the last God. How close am I and how far am I from the ultimate truth, the ultimate being, the ultimate reality, the God, the creative force that defines what there is, right? Now, making a decision regarding the nearness and remoteness of it is, again, anathema to liberalism. Liberalism will tell you how near or far you are from its God, which is beingness, which is the presence of its ideology, the power of its ideology. It will tell you that. You are not here to make a decision regarding how close or far you are to God. Liberalism will decide that for you. And your goal of trying to decide, to be a post-liberal decider, is confrontational, heretical, unacceptable, and deserves only guilt, shame, and exile. Mm-hmm. Right? Here in the ineluctable usualness of beings. Now, it's hard to find a better definition of liberalism, right? The usualness of beings, the homogeneity, the boredom that is liberalism, or the in a sense the uniformity. Bang is the most unusual. Bang is, of course, the most unusual, because bang comes and goes. Bang self-conceals. Bang is an event. Bang comes out of nowhere in a certain sense. That's one thing liberals definitely do not like, is shit that comes out of nowhere. Shit's only allowed to come out of liberalism. And the strangeness of bang is not a mode of its appearance. It's not just like its look, its style, its mode. It itself is strangeness.
Yeah. Wow, well done. That's like a fresh take. The self-concealing word has always been a bit confusing for me, and I feel this time looking at it that it's really contrasted to some of like the more recent episodes, or actually just a bit above, where you're talking about self-knowledge, progress, but also we talked in some earlier episodes about just, it's like the self, I guess it's just self-knowledge, the I know, the what are some of the other words that were coming up there? But I think it, seeing this or understanding the self-concealing as a counter to that is that like helps me get what that might mean.
I like that. Talk more about that, because I agree with you. The self-concealing idea has always been a little foggy. And I agree with you that it seems to sort of be starting to emanate a little more distinctively here, like in terms of what its relationship is to being this bang and being.
Yeah.
But you're linking it to the I know.
Yeah.
So talk to more about that. Talk more about that, because that seems very true.
So the I know, or the self-knowledge, or the saying one understands themselves and can define it in words.
So the self knowing the self and having a relationship with the self and being confident and clear and correct vis-a-vis oneself. Identity.
Yes.
Identity, yeah?
Yes, identity.
Ah, yes. Okay, I'm going to let you go on, but yes, identity and the self-concealing being opposites.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So, well, in a sense, the self-revealing and the self-concealing mm-hmm. would be opposites, mm-hmm. Or the self-manifesting.
It's like the self-identifying,
yes.
or the self-defining,
yes.
or like
yes, versus the self-erasing,
yeah,
and
yeah.
the self-coverting and the self-suppressing,
uh-huh.
and the self-concealing, yes. Uh-huh. Go
well,
ahead.
I've just never fully understood. So if it's self-concealing, does that mean it's concealing? I guess that means it's concealing the self, but there still has just been a clearing. So is it's a clearing for the self-concealing, or it's a...
Well, it's the clearing concealing, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, to me, that's why this passage is just bringing some clarity to this idea, because that's what an event is. And bang is event. An event is the clearing, a clearing concealing,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right? There's a clearing, something stands in the clearing, mm-hmm. and then there's a concealing because it goes away.
Yeah.
It goes away. And I think that's, to bring it back to liberalism, that's the sort of strangeness, the ineluctable usual, the unusualness, the torment mm-hmm. that liberalism finds so hard to swallow, is that identity is opposed to the clearing concealing.
Yeah.
Identity is the always there. Identity is the ideology of assuring one possesses the power to make sure that the liberal mindset is always there.
Yeah.
Whereas the post-liberal seeks to flee the always there because it is ineluctably usual, mm-hmm. tedious and oppressive, and it is a master. Okay,
mm-hmm.
an enslaving master. So the post-liberal seeks refuge or relation to or to be a or an appropriation by bang as the clearing concealing to experience the strangeness, the decisions, the mm-hmm. events, wherein they might decide how near or far they are from the last God.
Mm-hmm.
Like they, it's a craving for decision.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's something you feel from liberalism, is liberalism doesn't want you to think about anything.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't want you to make any decisions.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't want you to think independently. But the post-liberal craves those decisions, which, you know, Heidegger summarizes as decisions regarding the nearness and remoteness of the last God, but which could simply be called those decisions regarding how close or far we are from truth.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what we want to know. Are we close to truth here? Or are we far from truth here? Okay. And liberals say that's irrelevant.
Yeah.
I mean, the head of NPR only 4 or 5 years ago gave a big speech and saying that, you know, concern with truth is the problem, you know, because if you're concerned with truth, then you're not going to toe the line. You're not going to toe the party line. You're not just going to be a good liberal. Because liberals are not concerned with truth. They're concerned with what they view as progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
So maybe there's we should just
little,
try to,
let's finish.
Let's try to get to the finish.
It's a big,
yeah, let's try to get to the finish.
There's some bangers in here.
There's some bangers. I like that. That's good. B-E-Y-N-G-E-R.
I actually didn't think that.
Oh, you didn't think that?
No, I didn't.
No, there's some bangers in here. That's awesome. We're some bangers, aren't we? The bangers.
Totally.
We should change our last name to the bangers. All right, go ahead.
In the grounding domain of the truth of Bang, i.e. in Dasein, the uniqueness of death corresponds to the unusualness of Bang. The most frightful jubilation must be the dying of a god. Only the human being has the distinction of standing in front of death, because the human being is steadfastly in Bang, death, the highest testimony to Bang. In the other beginning, the truth of Bang must be ventured as grounding, as inventive thought of Dasein. I think you should, or should I finish?
Yeah, why don't you finish?
Okay. Only in Dasein does Bang attain the grounding of that truth in which all beings exist solely for the sake of Bang. Bang, which lights up as the trace of the path of the last god. The grounding of Dasein transforms the human being, seeker, preserver, steward. The transformation creates
This transformation creates
the space of the other necessities for the decision regarding the nearness and remoteness of the gods.
Yeah. So in Dasein, which I think is synonymized here as the grounding domain of the truth of Bang. Mm. So again, Dasein is the decisionary human, and the decisionary human the grounds the domain of truth of Bang. Gives it a place, a ground, in a sense only, I think Heidegger would say only human beings can ground the domain of the truth of Bang in Dasein. The uniqueness of death, in this grounding of the truth of Bang, the uniqueness of death corresponds to the unusualness of Bang, right? So what's the uniqueness of death? Well, everything dies a unique death, right? Everything has its own relationship with death. Where there is a unique relationship to death, there is Bang and there is Dasein. Where there is not a unique relationship to death, there is no Dasein, there is no Bang. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the uniqueness of death is a great gift. It's a great gift for us to meditate on and experience and be aware of. This is like the living dying in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The living dying, meditating on the living dying is not about meditating on dying abstractly. It's about meditating on the many unique deaths that the world contains, infinite numbers of unique deaths. Because the uniqueness of these deaths corresponds to the unusualness of the Bang that exists in the grounded domain of the truth of Bang in the Dasein, which is the decisionary human. So it's really the gateway to experiencing actual beings in a post-liberal domain wherein beings are allowed to be because Bang is allowed to be. The most frightful jubilation must be the dying of a god. So, I think what he's saying is that there are lots of unique deaths, but the really big scary party comes when a god dies. Mm-hmm. I guess that makes sense, I suppose. Only the human being has the distinction of standing in front of death. I would almost say the most frightful jubilation must be the dying of a god. Only humans can know that a god has died. Mm. Only humans can watch their god die. Mm. And every god, a god, it's important to put there, and there are infinite gods, and each has a unique death. So as we view the gods dying, each of our ideas, each of our truths, each of our representations, each of our identities, these are the dyings of a god, and they are a frightful jubilation. But only the human being has, in quotes, the distinction of standing in front of death. Only we can be there before it, because the human being is steadfastly in Bang. Death, the highest testimony of Bang. Only human beings are steadfastly in Bang. Therefore, only we can experience death. Mm-hmm. Experience death. Stand in front of death. Mm-hmm. So what that means is when you stand in front of death, death has not yet entered you. Mm-hmm. It's just standing there. And you think about it, and you talk to it, and it looks at you, and you shiver, and then you scowl, and then you puff up big and try to be scary, and then you curl down into a fetal position. And, you know, we have a relationship with death that it seems that other beings do not have. Mm-hmm. In the other beginning, the truth of Bang must be ventured as grounding, as inventive thought of Dasein. Yeah, so in the other beginning, in the post-liberal perspective, we seek the truth of Bang, we venture it in order to ground things, in order to discover what is true. And it's also ventured as an inventive thought of Dasein. It's how Dasein invents things through thought, or has inventive thoughts. Only in Dasein does Bang attain the grounding of that truth in which all beings exist solely for the sake of Bang. So in the transformation of human being into Dasein, into a decisionary human, beings come to exist for the sake of Bang. So Bang becomes preeminent. Bang, the clearing, concealing, the event, becomes the eminent domain of truth, and beings emerge out of it. Bang lights up as the trace of the path of the last god. Bang is, in a sense, a flare or a reflection or an explosion that follows in the path of the god moving through time. The grounding of Dasein transforms the human being into seeker, preserver, steward. So when Dasein is grounded, the human being becomes more than just a biological thing. They gain, one might almost say, a volition, what we call a volition. This transformation creates the space of the other necessities. So this transformation, that is the transformation to the other beginning, creates the space of the other necessities for the decision. So the necessities, the things we need to make a decision regarding the nearness and remoteness of the gods, those necessities, the things we need to make that decision, occur in the space that this transformation creates. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a...
So yeah, we laid it heavy here. I think this is powerful stuff regarding the transition out of identitarian liberalism, right?
Yeah.
And it's a real metaphysical an analysis of the metaphysical underpinnings of identitarian liberalism. The fundament of being that enslaves beings. Being rejected as a fortress that liberalism holds itself in. Therefore, if you step out of the fortress, you're obviously confronting the fort, and trying to leave that fort for a post-liberal perspective to make Bang the master of beings in a way. Which is an interesting master, because you're talking about a clearing, concealing. You're talking about a coming and going. You're talking about a transitory master. In a sense, you're talking about putting beings in the service of time and space. So yeah, one could ask almost like, if they're not in service of time and space, what are they in service of? Well, the being fundament, the beingness that liberalism posits as the necessary sine qua non of its ideological fortress, right? Mm-hmm. Of its substantialism that allows progress to be the ideological imperative of the people. Mm-hmm. Because in a sense, progress needs constant presence. It needs eternal substance. It needs a kind of generic there-ness, because there can't be gaps in progress. It can't just all of a sudden be nothing and then progress kind of picks back up. Mm-hmm. Progress must be perpetual and imminent and always, whereas bang is not perpetual, it's not imminent, it's not always, or it's not perpetually imminent, one should say. It's a little stochastic, it's a little spastic, it's a little eventful, right?
Yeah.
Like when we say, oh, that was an eventful evening,
yeah,
what do we mean? Well, there were like strange surprises, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we get smells here of liberalism's standardization of thought and life and reality and truth, right?
Yeah.
And we discover post-liberalism as a craving for decision and strangeness and newness and thought and truth and originality. We see how smothering liberalism is. What a crushing, trammeling mindset it is. What an addiction. What an obsession. It's you know, it's like when you're in the presence of liberals, you get this feeling of people who are really obsessively compulsive about the maintenance of their power structure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're very averse to systems that don't further their ability to control the system. Mm-hmm. So I think that what the post-liberal seeks is a system. I mean, everything is a system ultimately, but this post-liberal seeks a system that maximizes freedom. Mm-hmm. The liberal seeks a system that maximizes non-freedom. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. is, in a way, the primary distinction. Put another way, mm-hmm. post-liberalism, or we should say liberalism, seeks a system that assures identity, mm-hmm. and post-liberalism seeks a system that ensures the clearing, concealing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One is liberation, one is not.
Mm-hmm.
One is freedom, one is not. One is breaking free, and one is staying caged. Yeah. Yeah. I myself am convinced of that, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say. Go ahead.
I feel like there's something obviously, perhaps, just so essential about it being like the coming and going and the clearing and concealing. And I also feel like it's one of the hardest things to like be okay with and get used to. And a friend of mine recommended this weekend, there was this conference called the Second Renaissance, and it's basically, my understanding is it's like a community of people who are like trying to think about things in a different way, I guess. And they say we're going through a meta crisis, and there's like a, you know, sort of a dipping and an upgoing and stuff. And I like dropped in on a few of them. And most of the speakers weren't particularly engaging. But there was one who I liked, and I looked a little more into. His name is John Vervaeke, And I looked a little more into it because he also mentions Heidegger. So I was like, that got him bonus points for me. And what the sort of thing that he talks about is, or I mean,
how do you spell it? How do you spell his last name?
V-E-R-V-A-E-K-E.
V-E-R-V-A-E-K-E?
Yes, I think. And so I listened to a little of his stuff, and just one thing that struck me was what he talks about is, and he talks about lots of things. He's actually a very popular sort of thinker. He talks about the advent of the sacred, which that's sort of his last god or his version of the second Renaissance, or he says he used to call it a non-religious religion or something, but right now he calls it like the advent of the sacred. And I think advent is a word that Heidegger uses or something very similar.
Yeah.
The coming and going. Yeah.
The advent of the last god or something.
But just like what struck me with that is, I mean, I think that it's still one directional, right? It's still like the coming of the sacred or I imagine the arrival or the finding or the something of the sacred. So I feel like, and I have felt in my brief look at what he talks about, just that there's something in Heidegger where there's this sort of, it goes a step beyond, it goes a step further still, where it's the coming and going, not just the coming. I think he calls it the end.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's very, so that's very really, well put. Yeah.
Yeah. It just really struck me as like, that was sort of like, I think his stuff is interesting, but it still feels to me, and it is very based in European thinkers and philosophers and kind of pulling from that knowledge base.
Well, it sounds like he's trying to just reestablish some kind of newly defined beingness.
Yeah.
Still in the vein of trying to create a fundament that we can all just kind of like accept as the most imminent and important state of things.
How to meditate, how to have wisdom, how to, and I think
it's still liberalism.
Yeah, it still feels like it because it's still, and I mean,
it's not bang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something kind of nice and interesting about some things, but it feels so like, and I think maybe this is part of my issue with a lot of liberalism, is it like, it actually gives a prescription. It's like, okay, so if you can meditate, or if you can find wisdom, or if you can, find the advent of the sacred, or go on a pilgrimage to find it. I mean, like, nice words, right? They all sound good, but I'm just, somehow in all those solutions or offerings of solutions, I haven't found like a solution, I guess.
Yeah.
So I don't know, sort of a long way of saying that I just think there's something so essential to the coming and going, which again, I don't feel like I'm like comfortable with. I'm not comfortable when I'm like sitting there. I'm like, where is it?
Yeah.
Like, where is the,
yeah,
where's the truth? Where's the comfort? Where's the,
yeah, like,
calmness? Where's the God? Where is it?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I mean, that's where, you know, Heidegger talking about the decision regarding the nearness or remoteness of the last God, right? Heidegger's, so much of what you're talking about, sort of this new liberal spiritualism, or it's trying to create like a new canon or a new religion or a new absolute or a new belief system, a new order. And it is very much in the vein of trying to offer solace and comfort to people and something to believe in and something to gather around. I mean, I looked at the website of that sort of new second Renaissance thing, and it's clearly a sort of a therapeutic venture to offer people some kind of sanctuary, some kind of new something to hold on to in the face of what they, I think they sort of describe as, you know, the modern world's, you know, dizzying disarray of you know, technology and, yeah. and nihilism and rancor and ideas and, you know, entertainment and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So it's fundamental worldview is that things are really, really chaotic and we need something to hold on to. Mm-hmm. And what Heidegger is actually doing is he's saying what we need is we need to, in a way, do the opposite. I mean, it's not he's saying there are massive historical and metaphysical forms that we have created in order to be comfortable and to hold on and to be ordered and to have the sacred and to have the sanctuary and to have the thing to believe in. And from that, we have lost our unique relationship to death. We have lost our ability to make decisions. Mm-hmm. We've lost any kind of experience with what comes and goes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Regardless of how much we want everything to not go, mm-hmm. right? We've kind of convinced ourselves that it's kind of better to live in this state of believing that everything is forever coming. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a way, that's progressivism. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The best is yet to come, right? Mm-hmm. Everything is still coming, but nothing is going. Or the only thing that's going is all the bad things. Yeah. And so Heidegger is saying, seek life in decision. Don't seek safety in delusion. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a little more challenging, perhaps. But actually, I would say that the whole liberal, sacred, safe obsession is a front.
Yeah.
It's a lie. It's only convinced you that it offers comfort and solace. When in fact it doesn't, because it's a delusion and it's a lie, and you will know that yeah. somewhere deep down in yourself.
Yeah.
And only the truth of the clear and concealing, only the truth of Bang, only beings in service to Bang will ever provide you actual comfort. Because in a sense, the truest comfort is to stand before the uniqueness of your death for your entire life, so that when your death comes, you've actually had a pretty decent long conversation with it. Mm-hmm. It's the hiding from that uniqueness of your death. It's the hiding from the bang of your existence that actually causes all the trauma and pain. Mm-hmm. Because you cannot be reconciled with that. You cannot rest in a lie.
Yeah.
You know, the reason, you know, that Sleep No More is at the heart of Macbeth. It's not that Macbeth mm-hmm. has killed some people. It's that Macbeth now realizes that he has done something that he must hide from. Not only hide from himself, hide from others, but hide from himself. And that lie that he must now be, because he's now a murderer, will keep him from sleeping. And, you know, liberals don't sleep.
Yeah.
Right? Think about your family members, right? Think about think about the ceaseless posts about how, you know, I mean, anxiety is Sleep No More.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
To conclude, the comfort and safety that liberalism has said you must pursue via its methods is a lie.
Yeah.
because everything liberalism says is a lie. So anytime you say, oh, liberalism says that, you have to realize it's a lie.
Yeah.
So you have to question it. You have to question everything. And Heidegger, you know, this like, we need the re-advent of the sacred, you know, puke. And I say puke. Okay? Give me a break. The only calling that I have discovered that makes any sense is Heidegger's calling, which is to go to bang, which means you're constantly going. When you get to it, it's not there. What you're seeking has already come and gone. You're going to get tastes of it. You're going to find some of it, but you're going to have a unique relationship to your death. And you know what? That's the only thing that deserves the name of life. Liberalism does not deserve the name of life because it is a system designed to negate the uniqueness of death, to negate bang, to negate the coming and going, to establish a false comfort in order to maintain the flock. Mm-hmm. Right? So that it can hold on to power. Not only power in the world, but power over the things in it. Mm. Anyhow, is that it? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Any comments?
It does. I guess I think my sort of last question would be, so how then do you how do you sit with the clearing concealing? Like, how do you sit with the concealing?
How do you sit with it?
Yeah, like, how do you watch it? How do you let it conceal itself? I mean, it is concealed, I guess. I'm not sure.
Yeah, how do you let it? I mean, it does.
Yeah.
Better question is, how do you deny that it does?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, good answer.
But what I mean, what expound on that question? What do you mean? How do you sit with it? Like, how do you like it? How do you be comfortable with it?
I guess so.
How do you remain calm in the face of it? Is that kind of what you mean?
I guess so.
I don't know. Maybe you don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think. Maybe you don't. And why does that matter? Why do you want to be calm? Why do you want to be comfortable? Why do you want to be okay? Why do you want to sit with things?
Yeah.
Maybe you shouldn't be sitting. Maybe you should be heading down the road. Maybe you should be up and at 'em. Maybe you should not know what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should not think that you're sitting anywhere. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should not think that you're here and it's there. All these ideas were given to you. Where is it? What is it? Why are you? Who's sitting? Who's standing? Where is it happening? Is it happening? You think it's? I mean, where do you envision bang occurring? Right?
Yeah.
Where is it occurring? Oh, what? 10 feet over there? No. Where is it occurring? You act as if it's on TV and you're watching it. How do you sit and watch it? It's not. You know, that's the other thing. It's like, liberalism wants everything to have a place, and everything is in a situation. Everything is like, you know, well, where is it? Where can I? How can I find it? How can I understand the playing field that I'm in so that it really keeps me relaxed?
Yeah.
None of that is very good.
Yeah.
None of that's very good thinking. All of that is a liberal lie. Bang's not right over there. Bang is you. And bang is not you. Bang is all over there. Bang is here. Bang. There's no. You can't even really talk about the positionality of bang. It's the temporal place, spatial playing field. Mm-hmm. Where's that? Mm-hmm. You know, do we have words for this thing? But you know, you wanna have it. You know, that's maybe that's why he puts has in quotes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You wanna have things. Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's every instinct you have for having things is a liberal lie. Mm-hmm. The difference between sitting with bang and not sitting with bang is a liberal lie. The comfort or discomfort at the uniqueness of one's death is a liberal lie. Because what Heidegger says is the only thing that really exists for Dasein as the domain of the grounding of truth is decision. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to put it bluntly or patly, how do you sit with bang? That's the liberal way of asking it. Mm-hmm. Or how do you sit with the clearing concealing? That's the liberal way of asking it. The post-liberal way of asking it is, what are you deciding to do?
Yeah.
See, there's a lot of ways to avoid decision, but he says in here, you know, are we going to sit there and be trampled over and just evade and hide and run away and duck our heads? Mm-hmm. Or are we going to realize that everything other than facing the decisions that are ours to make vis-a-vis the clearing, concealing, and the uniqueness of our death, living that decision, everything other than living that decision is a liberal lie. Mm-hmm. That's how strong our commitment needs to be to achieving post-liberalism.
Yeah.
It's a commitment to the decision regarding bang and a refusal to let the lie govern, in a sense,
yeah.
Let the lie pull us into hiding.
Right.
And again, one of the most fundamental lies is that going to the post-liberal decisionary place is scarier than not. Mm-hmm. Now that is one of the great lies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the scariest thing above all else is not living mm-hmm. when you're alive. Mm-hmm. That is the horror of horrors.
Yeah.
Done?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Good night.
Thank you. Good night. Thanks for joining us for the Leaping Choya podcast. For more information, visit leapingchoya.com and be sure and follow us on socials. Until next time.